This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 128.
If you want to start moving towards this as a HR leader, it is moving towards a more product mindset in HR. Instead of thinking about massive projects or massive streams of work, we can start thinking about features and releases of our HR products. So for example, I was working with one global HR team. They're leading an organization of 45,000 people, and we need to move into a quarterly planning from an annual planning cycle. And the biggest difficulty for these leaders is to start chunking down these elephant projects into attainable, deliverable paths. They come into prioritization with themes such as management development or people experience. And I'm trying to shake them up, wake them up to say, this isn't a deliverable. Okay, people experience is a theme. What are you going to deliver under people experience during the next quarter? What is the outcome of that? And how can you see that you've actually succeeded?
How can you embrace an agile HR mindset? Why is agile a better approach to delivering value than our traditional methodologies? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. If you've been following the podcast, then you know that last October, I launched a targeted 3-week virtual development experience for next-gen HR leaders called Elevate. Over 100 next-gen HR leaders participated in Elevate 2024 and had the opportunity to learn directly from 21 of the best minds in our field. In fact, here's what one participant said about Elevate 2024. Elevate is like a master's in HR at a fraction of the cost. If you're serious about becoming a better HR professional, this event is a must. Well, today I am super excited to announce that you can now register for Elevate 2025, which will take place over 3 weeks starting on Tuesday, May 20th, with live sessions every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday through June 5th. And over those 3 weeks, you'll have the opportunity to learn from 18 HR thought leaders during 16 interactive sessions with live Q&As, all with the goal of taking your business acumen, strategic thinking, influence skills, and coaching capabilities to the next level. If you're a CHRO or a senior HR leader, this is an opportunity to elevate your HR business partners and centers of excellence professionals' strategic capabilities and business impact. And if you're a next-gen HR leader, this is a once-a-year opportunity to invest in your capabilities and career. And starting today through Friday, February 21st at midnight, because you are a listener of the Future of HR podcast, you can get VIP pricing on Elevate 2025. Go to futureofhr.com and you'll see the Elevate 2025 link, or go to elevate2025.vip/next-gen-HR, and you can learn more about the 16 interactive sessions, the 18 thought leaders, and why this is the development experience of the year for next-gen HR leaders like yourself. And with that, my guest this week is Rena Hellstrom. Rena is a global pioneer in agile HR and has been a leading voice in the space since 2010. Her company, Agile HR Community, supports HR teams and organizations as they move towards modern HR operating models, updating the mindset in HR, and digitizing HR services, including utilizing AI in HR. Agile HR Community has grown to be the leading training, consulting, and coaching partner for Agile HR trainings, certifying hundreds of HR people each year. Rena is also the author of the book, Agile HR, Delivering Value in the Changing World of Work, a book that is quickly becoming the go-to guide for Agile HR and is absolutely worth checking out. I firmly believe that HR leaders and their teams should be embracing the agile HR mindset and methodologies, and there's no one better to learn from than Rena. which is why I invited her to speak at Elevate 2025, where she'll be not only sharing what Agile HR is, but more importantly, how you get started. So if you enjoyed this conversation today and you want to dig deeper in Agile HR, you should definitely register for Elevate and make sure you attend Rena's presentation. And in my conversation with Rena, we discussed how Agile HR can revolutionize HR's approach to value delivery, how small-scale pilots before full rollouts leads to better HR solutions that actually stick, why cross-functional teams are the secret sauce for transforming everything from onboarding to performance management, how co-creating HR programs with employees dramatically boosts both buy-in and results, and how HR can shift from traditional metrics to product-focused KPIs that showcase real impact, and much, much more. I'd love to hear your thoughts this episode as you listen, so drop me a line on LinkedIn or say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with Rena. Rena, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, JP, for having me. This is really amazing to be here with you.
Well, we're excited to have you. I've been passionate about Agile HR and the idea of using Agile principles for a long time. And so I was super excited when I came across your profile and what you did. It was like, I have to have you in the podcast. So I'm glad you're here.
I've been working with Agile for 14 years now and with HR for longer than I dare to say here. Combining these for a long time has been bringing me some experiences and examples that I'm happy to share, and also happy to hear what you've got in your back pocket from your previous jobs.
Well, I'll share what I've got as well, but let's start with a little bit more of you. You started a company called Agile HR Community, and you've co-authored a book called Agile HR, Developing Value for a Changing World of Work. You speak, you consult, you talk about Agile all the time. Talk a little more about what does Agile for HR really mean. Give us a little more detail around this.
First of all, there's a lot of misunderstandings of what Agile really means in HR. And I'm trying to be as clear as I can here now in the beginning so that people can understand what this podcast is going to be about. So first of all, Agile is a value delivery mindset. And I'll say that again. How we deliver value. It's been utilized for 30 years in software. They are building products and services through this way of working, way of thinking, and way of delivering value. One thing that I usually bring up when I try to explain this to people who don't know about this is that imagine that our world is stable, it's predictable, we know exactly what we're building, and we know how to get there. That is called a waterfall plan. It's got a plan that we can create. We know where we're going, we know where we are, and we can backtrack that plan into a what we call a chart, delegate these tasks, and know that if we continue with that plan, we will get that thing delivered. This works as long as we're in a stable and predictable world. But what the software side realized 30 years ago is that they were not. So many things were changing when they were developing and delivering their products and services out to the people, is that they couldn't trust this plan. And this is in the background and the fundamental kind of understanding of agility, is that we need a new structure of delivering value. We cannot just create that plan and then go with that plan, trying to dismiss or even mitigate all the changes around us, because our world is changing now. It is continuously changing. Agility is the structure, the discipline, the way of delivering value when you've got an unstable, unpredictable, changing environment. Agile is the how you build stuff. Agile is the how you get it out to your users. And this is done in an incremental fashion with feedback driving your product development all the time. So this is from a HR perspective. I tend to ask one question. JP, if you were in a HR position where you were a year ago or 2 years ago, and I would ask you, how long can you trust a plan? If you create a plan today of your work, how long can you trust that plan before something major changes and you need to go back and replan the plan? How long would that be?
I would love to say a month, but it may be 2 weeks. And you know, I think things do happen so quickly. I even believe annual planning is just outdated. I think you've got to think about quarter by quarter. Like, what do we get done the next 3 months that we know is real, that we want, add value? And then once you deliver that, now what's the next quarter? And I was moving away from annual planning for a long time because I think we've all been frustrated this annual planning cycle when you get to the mid-year. And it actually doesn't make a lot of sense to say what goals aren't relevant anymore and which new goals have popped up. It's like you're starting the process all over. I never understood that. So I think it's nice to have these big goals for an organization around financials. But from an HR perspective, I always try to get my team to think quarter by quarter because it was much more likely to get done.
This is exactly what we're seeing. When I ask this from HR leaders around the world, it ranges from 3 months, maybe half a year for some companies who doesn't see that much turbulence and change, to a week. I could plan for a week. And this is the point. This is the point. The faster your environment is changing around you, the faster your planning cadence has to be as well. And this is what agility really means. It's to break down those big goals into smaller, attainable, incremental parts of work so that you have flexibility in taking, considering the changes around you, being resilient, understanding that situations and requirements change, and continuously develop that value anyway. Not stopping everything and going, planning the full plan again, but there is a discipline and a structure that we can bring in, which brings focus. It brings the value delivery to a point where your teams can actually work together despite all of these changes, and they're fine with the changes. So that's what agility is. But then this fundamental philosophy brings in a lot of different mindset, tools, practices, ways of working, teamwork that I hopefully can get to in this podcast with you.
Yeah, I think it's great you bring this up. And I think that waterfall mentality, when we think about that, the other piece, what I would remember hearing a lot of times with tech vendors especially, or even IT teams, you would start to build something. It would take 6 months. By the time you build it, you find out that that wasn't what the end user requirements were to begin with. Like, no one really wanted what they just built, but they spent 6 months or more time on that. And I think HR, have been slow to adopt this process. We will build our own processes. It could take a long time, but I think the more progressive HR organizations are doing some of the agile, or they're getting customer, end user, employee feedback, and they're building that and building product roadmaps and thinking just differently about things. So I'm excited to dig into this more. So talk about what I think about for HR leaders. They've got to adopt these new ways of thinking and new ways of working. What does this mean for HR? What is this big change on thinking and acting differently from your perspective, Rena?
First, we need to know what truly is valuable. Coming back to your point there is we work on a lot of things which aren't really valuable for the organization. As you said, when we release things, it is something that people don't want to use, or it doesn't work in the way that they were supposed to, or it's not bringing the value. So deep focus on what truly is valuable. And these conversations, I actually facilitate quite a lot of these conversations with HR leadership teams. And you can't imagine the conversations in the room. Everybody comes in with their pet projects and what they would like to do in their silos, right? And all of them are must-dos and very important. Whereas we then, when we really start ranking things and prioritizing things, we start understanding what truly matters for the strategy that we have, for the direction of the company, and for the situation the company is at. The other thing is, if you want to start moving towards this as a HR leader, it is moving towards a more product mindset in HR. Instead of thinking about massive projects or massive streams of work, we can start thinking about features and releases of our HR products. So for example, I was working with one global HR team. They're leading an organization of 45,000 people, and we need to move into a quarterly planning from an annual planning cycle. And the biggest difficulty for these leaders is to start chunking down these elephant projects into attainable, deliverable parts. They come into prioritization with themes such as management development or people experience. And I'm trying to shake them up, wake them up to say, this isn't a deliverable. Okay, people experience is a theme. What are you going to deliver under people experience during the next quarter? What is the outcome of that? And how can you see that you've actually succeeded? And HR teams are not used to this kind of conversation. And when we start facilitating this, they're starting to understand that, wow, okay, we have to be more deliberate in what we're building, in what the outcome is, and then also understand the capacity in our HR teams. Can we build all of these things? And prioritization is where it usually... So I tend to say, for going towards an agile HR operating model and agile HR ways of working in HR teams, the biggest blocker are HR leaders themselves. The biggest blocker are HR leaders themselves because they're so used to the way they prioritize annually the big elephant projects instead of smaller parts. They are used to the siloed approach of my people are working in talent, your people are working in the comp and ben, they are working in performance, and here we have HR services. But we're actually working on a value stream which includes all of these things. We come into the conversations of how do we have cross-functional teams? What does that mean from my bonus perspective? Can I offer my team members to a shared project without kind of losing out on my own targets? We come into all of these conversations, which are super important, and they come to the fundamental questions of how we do organizational development and design nowadays in HR.
Hey everyone, after a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Rena. Are you ready to take your career to the next level? If you are, then you need to download the HR Leaders Blueprint, featuring battle-tested strategies from over 100 HR thought leaders and CHROs. This comprehensive 18-page guide delivers actionable steps, strategic frameworks, and real-world insights to elevate your impact. No theoretical fluff, just proven tactics to becoming a business-focused HR leader. And the best part, it's completely free. To download the HR Leaders Blueprint, go to futureofhr.com. That's futureofhr.com. And if you want to get a jumpstart on your 2025 career goals, then you do not want to miss out on the HR Leaders Blueprint. Yeah, I love that you talked about moving away from these themes. We have broad goals. Of course, we want to have engaged workforces. We want to have people high performing. We want to be developing people. But to your point, when you think about agile and you take a product mindset or customer oriented mindset, what are we really delivering that will add value? And I think what HR forgets sometimes is that value is really is the inside of the person who's receiving that value's mind.
Yes.
So we start to build these programs, but have we really thought about what this is, what an employee wants or needs, or how it fits into their life? How will they use it? We have to take much more of a user-centric perspective when we build this out. Otherwise, we end up building things that aren't connected to the business, aren't really adding value, and then seem like a nuisance to, I think, our people leaders and management saying, well, why did you go this route?
Agile HR trainer? Sounds like that.
Yeah, like, yeah. Help you do this. Yeah. I've read a lot about it. I've done a little bit of the principles.
Yeah.
I've worked with our technology company, so it's Dick's Sporting Goods. We stood up 26 product and technology agile teams. So I learned a lot with them at that time. But I think it's always hard, and this is where I was going to go next to my next question, because I think one of the hardest things you talked about is how do we collaborate? HR is a lot of times we just have certain specialties, whether it's talent acquisition or learning development or total rewards, and we don't often work together. So how do you get people to now to collaborate differently and come together and say, oh, I need all of us to work together to build this just like a product team would have?
To be honest, it's very gratifying to train HR people in this mindset and this way of thinking, because they're quite fast to jump on the train and say, you know what, this is what we've been looking for a long time, because it doesn't work what we're doing now. So let's set up a few projects, a few deliverables where we try this out. We bring in people so that we got cross-functional teams, bring in people from different types of domain expertise in HR and give them the freedom and empowerment to deliver the product out. Let's say that we work with onboarding. Onboarding goes across the board. We need people from talent acquisition, comp and ben, hiring talent and learning. We need somebody who knows what to do with manager development. We need IT and facilities on board there as well, so that we can actually develop a great onboarding experience end to end. And when we start having this idea and testing this out, HR people realize how fun it is to work this way, how we are not working on stuff are parallel to each other, on the same stuff, that we actually focus to prioritize and understand who's going to work on what, come together to deliver that. We also build incrementally. So I think that is the one which is very helpful and welcomed by HR people, to say, how can we build an onboarding program for this organization? We've got, 30,000 people around the world. How do we prioritize? We don't build onboarding for everybody, for the whole organization at once. What would be the most valuable part, right? The question is, where is the first release? What can we release in a quarter of a time, which already brings value to the organization? That means that we start prioritizing releases, looking at what brings value to the business, to the employees, and then we start building that part. We think in features. So that's our first feature of our onboarding, if that makes sense, right? And then we prioritize the next feature. Okay, we built the first week onboarding experience for blue collar in our factories for the first quarter. What's our next part of onboarding that we can build now? So maybe there's another part that needs updating or a totally new development. This is how we start thinking in a product way. And when we move towards a product way, we start bringing in that feedback-driven product development as well. We actually have focus groups. We bring in these blue collars or we go in and see how they are working. It's called Go to Gemba in Kanban, thinking in Lean Kanban thinking. Go and see what really happened so that you understand the reality of these people. Sometimes in HR, we got way too exaggerated expectations of how long some managers can work on our people processes. And we build in a onboarding conversation of an hour for a blue collar and their manager. You won't take out an hour of a factory worker's time during their first week to just have a discussion with their manager. You will do that in 15 minutes, right? That's the valuable part, to really understand what's valuable and what's not. So this is where we come in with these feedback loops, testing and learning, experimenting small scale. And then when he said, how can we move into this? When the HR leaders see how quickly this team is delivering and developing and validating their assumptions, how they in a quarter of a year can do something that previously took this organization a year or longer, that is usually selling in the agile HR operating model to them to say, wow, we haven't done this in this way before, but it's clearly working, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I love that. And I think there's sort of rapid development, iteration, and having releases frees people up to say, it doesn't have to be perfect.
Exactly.
And it's not going to be perfect. Because I think one of the challenges of innovation for big companies, and all of us have felt this, is that there's this expectation that everything we do is totally buttoned up, every project, everything's thought through. But that's not how innovation actually happens. That's not how you have new, better, and different things actually take place. You have to sort of experiment, and maybe you fail, or maybe it doesn't work. And so I think that's so important. And I think that user feedback is great. When we were redesigning onboarding for McAfee, we had some challenges. It was through COVID. And I think people thought that the instructions they got when they opened their beautifully designed box, which is really nice, with some swag and their laptop, and the instructions were good enough to get people on and logged in remotely. We asked people to actually videotape themselves on their iPhones. And so we could actually see how long it actually took actually log on and see the frustration of what they were experiencing with this very poorly written instructions that IT thought was great, and IT did their best, but we weren't taking a very user-centric point of view on it. It was eye-opening for a lot of people that this was not working to what we expected, right? And we had to rechange it. So I think having that, being there, seeing it, getting the focus group, getting real feedback from employees is so critical to designing something that's going to be able to have lasting impact and credibility, frankly.
I'm not sure if you've heard this, that a product never survives its first contact with the user. I think that's something that we can take in HR as well, where I would say this is a massive mindset shift in HR, because HR people are traditionally quite risk averse. They've been working in situations where their every move, their every answer is scrutinized, or scrutinized to the detail level, and we are bombarded with stories where people are taken to court, right? And we have to be legally compliant to make sure that we're legally compliant. That is sitting there, yes. But one thing where we can take in this agile mindset is to understand what are the true constraints. Those need to be there. But then we don't have to be perfectionists with everything, right? We can talk about what is the risk of this happening and how can we mitigate the risk, or can we live with the risk of it's not being perfect? I worked with a team that developed their performance management structure and system and process. And they had this crazy idea of adding both employee and manager approval to every page in the HR system for the performance management discussion. So there were a total of 6 or 7 approvals just by getting it written into the system. And I said to them, why? What value does that bring, that you have people clicking on approve, going into the system, and it's not going flowing forward in the process if they haven't gone and clicked in 7 times or approve? That doesn't make any sense. Stop with this nonsense. But then you add approvals where you can't handle the risk. That's where what I try to say, understand with this risk aversion where you really need to be risk averse and where not. Then one thing which I think is very important with the agile mindset, which is difficult for HR people when they learn it, but then when they actually start utilizing it, they're very happy with that, is small-scale testing. We never release anything to the whole organization or to a whole population without having released it first to a smaller one to see how it really works. And you just mentioned that video, how they really were feeling when they got that. You can just do this small scale. For example, if you're going to send an email to all managers, you do your best, you ask your HR colleague about feedback, but also ask five managers to say, we're going to send out this email to all managers in the company. Could you be our test group? We'll send this to you and we want your feedback, how we can improve this. Just by doing small iterations like this, you're going to improve your products. May they be an email or may they be a big performance management improvement, because you've got that feedback loop feeding you with real-time data about what people's reactions will be. The other thing is, people say to me, but yeah, but we're piloting, right? We're piloting things. A pilot is something you run in the very late stage of product development when everything is packaged, clear, built, it's been integrated, and then you run a pilot process with people. And that is a way too late to start making any changes, some fundamental changes in your parts of the products. You usually just mitigate the problems that come up there, but very rarely start challenging the fundamental assumptions that you have about the product in that stage. So piloting is not the same as experimenting. And I want to highlight that with a big yellow highlighting pen.
That's really, really clear and helpful to think through, because I do think you're right. When you get to a pilot stage, and all of us have done this, especially in learning development, we always pilot our training. But the feedback you get there is, it's sort of like you're smoothing out a few rough edges.
You know, exactly,
you're not
that
fundamentally changing, because your pilot probably is 3 weeks before you're going live and you've already committed to the live. And so there's not a lot of time to change. So I love what you're talking about there. And it reminds me of the concept of minimum viable product. Talk more about that. How does that get to experimentation to actual pilot? Is there an MVP inside there? How do you think about that in HR terms?
Super. So let's do an MVP with what would be a HR product that you would be interested in. So I'll explain to you through L&D, a training program? Is performance
management?
Let's
do a training program. Let's do a management training, people training program.
So I will explain to you an agile way of thinking that I've actually utilized when building a management training program. First of all, we identify the strategy. What is the really important in our strategy? Where do we want to take managers long term? And we had 12 people come in who are all managers and sit down and say, this is where we're heading. What are the learning needs that you have that will take you towards this? And we had a co-creative workshop with the managers, not just HR people, not just talent people, but with the managers to start listing what we call releases of learning. Here are clear things where they see gaps in their learning. Great. Now we have a prioritized list of things that they think they need to learn. We then brought in our own expertise and said as well, we think A, B, and C are things which you might not see, but we see that are important and validated if they think they are. And they were. So we have a prioritized list of stuff to learn now. Then we start talking about priority. What do you think is most important to learn? We created a backlog, as in we start learning that during the first month, that during the next month. So we run a year. We had 12 themes and each month is a theme. Now we come to the point of how much time can you spend on it, really? I mean, that's a constraint from a management point of view. How much time could you spend this group, this cohort on learning? And they had a conversation about the month in October month. They were doing budgeting. They can't really spend a lot of time on learning. And they gave me a constraint saying, okay, 5 to 6 hours. Great. We've got 5 to 6 hours. How do you want to spend that? And then they talked about they really want to have somebody who is a deep knowledge expert. So we curated with them actually creating the learning journey. And then I curated that for them for that month. So then they were participating in setting the goals, in setting the constraints. They were very committed to learning because they were practically designing it with me. And then I curated the learning for them. In addition to that, they always said, we want to apply that somehow in our own teams and get feedback. So we built in the learning loop with the application feedback as well. I could have done that without their input, right? Because I am professional in building programs, but it wouldn't have landed that well. And they were so committed and they were driving it themselves. And then we prioritized for the next month, of course, what we will do. So this is how we ran the program for a year. In the middle of the year, there was a disruption coming in. This company needed to lay off a lot of people, so cost-saving actions. We got together with the group and they reprioritized. They said, we want a new theme. The next theme is going to be, say, cost-saving actions, lay off people, international kind of layoffs, what that means. How do we communicate about this? And we set up to build that program so it helped them go through this disruption in the organization. So you can hear elements of agility here. It's not a recipe that you should do this way every time, but you hear elements of agility here. Co-creation, very clear on constraints. What are our goals? We had the big strategy there. And then having people to self-organize and be participating in the actual journey.
Yeah, the two takeaways for me, Marina, is that it's not top-down. This is not something being done to them. It's being done with them. You know, I think a lot of times when we build programs, it's sort of a top-down approach. And it's almost like a magic trick from a magician pulling a rabbit out of their hat. Like, ta-da, here's this program. And people are like, oh, I didn't know I wanted that program. I didn't know I was getting a rabbit right now.
Yeah.
And I think what you're talking about is, hey, let me co-create this with you, help build and make sure we really do meet your needs, because that is actually what we're trying to do, especially in that case like that. That's really good. Very helpful. I'm also curious, and I wanted to ask you about metrics. How do you measure success in agile HR differently from traditional HR approaches? Is there a different way to think about success here?
Yes. I train HR leaders. That's what I do. I'm running a training program called HR Strategy and Portfolio, where we are diving into KPIs and metrics in one of the key sessions. This is a real pitfall for HR. Understanding how to set KPIs, objectives, and metrics, how to utilize the feedback, how to build in feedback loops. Very few people sit down. Let's take an example. It's easier to explain. Recruitment process. I was working with a company and they previously improved their recruitment process. And I asked them, when do you know that you're done with this work? When do you know that the recruitment process is delivering what it should? And their answer was, when we have trained the managers, we are ready with this work. So when we have trained the managers in how the new recruitment process works, we're done. We're moving on to the next thing. And I was tearing off my hair saying, no, you're not done. That is the time when your product hits the market. That's like launching a product, new product to a consumer, and then saying, bye, we're not interested in how it works. If you need it, if you want it, or are you going to pay for it, right? So I said, if it's a recruitment process, let's at least add that we have the metrics, numbers running through. What's the percentage of recruitments that go through this process? What is the experience for both our talent or managers and our candidates going through this process? What are the lean metrics or the process metrics, like lead times, waiting time, the numbers of candidates in the pipeline, the churn from the pipeline, these strategic metrics that we have in talent acquisition? Maybe we have some strategic goals as well to say we need more high quality candidates. So we might have that as a metric, which then connects to employer branding and reaching out and marketing to these candidates. So we want to have objectives that connect to real outcomes. And here, what I can see HR people do is they go too big. They say that for a recruitment process, we will see better employee experience during the first year from people who joined our company. That's nothing to do directly with your recruitment process. It's not connected directly to a recruitment process. You can say that your recruitment process works well, right? So we need something which is connected to the product, set product KPIs, objectives, and start following them up. And this is something that HR people are not that quite good at. And then the other part is financial metrics. So understanding return of investment and understanding how we can build a business case. And I'll give you an example again. I had a person come into my training and she said she's running HR service centers, three different service centers, three different time zones, 400 people in these service centers. And she wanted to invest in a training program for them. She wanted to invest like 30K training these people in a certain compliance matter. And she said this is a cost for her. And I said, how can you turn this into an investment instead? Well, she said, well, we're actually going to be able to process 50% more questions because we got so many questions about this particular theme. We'll be faster at replying to these requests and questions. And I said, you get 50% more out of 400 people. Can you just calculate that with their salary? to what you get with the 30K, and you got a return of investment calculation that is a no-brainer. But people don't think like this in HR. We're not tying things to what we are gaining, how much efficiency we're gaining, or how much productivity we're gaining, and just making up a metric, at least the ballpark amount. We're saying, but we can't calculate that exactly. No. Do you think marketing is calculating everything? No. They got ballparks. They got some idea of what the kind of output outcome will be. And that's what we need to learn as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great reminder for HR, because our tendency to want to be perfect and risk averse, because we do, we have a lot of questions that come back to HR leaders from business leaders and expect us to have all the answers, especially related to legal and things like that, compliance. But we also need to be thoughtful about that and give ourselves a break on measuring ROI. You're right. Finance doesn't have a perfect metric. They may have prettier Excel sheets, but they're making assumptions on return on investment for themselves. Same with marketing. But I think your point really that really stands out for me is, okay, what is the product or what is the service you're offering or rolling out? How do you think about metrics that measure not only the employee experience, but some of the output around that? So you learn, can make it better and refine it, versus a metric of like that talent acquisition example. Let's look at people who've left in the first year. Well, that may or may not have been a good hire. Now, we always look at if someone leaves within the first month, that's probably a bad hire, potentially. It was a wrong fit. Fair. But maybe there's onboarding. You know, there's other things that can be conflating that data, and it's not the same as what you talked about. So I think it's a good reminder for HR folks.
If we go to the agile teamwork, when we start implementing agility in HR teams, we start having metrics around the how we work as well. We talk about estimating the workload. We talk about velocity. We talk about projecting when things will be done and ready and released. We talk about team health. We talk about seeing one of the best examples that I know of has built dashboards to see what all teams are doing at any time with the backlogs and work and estimation, what we call burn down chart. We're burning down a backlog to see this is what we're working on. I've never seen this in HR, that you can actually, as a HR leader, open up a dashboard and see what 130 people are working on and seeing where capacity is starting to be narrow and where people are going to be ready, and you can move people to work on other products as well. So you can start having this, what we call portfolio view. Quite often what I hear from HR leaders is we just come in and we just don't have an overview of what's going on. We just have these big strategic bullet points and a PowerPoint, but we do not know who's working on what the real capacity is, what we're actually delivering out the door, and when that's going to happen. And business leaders are sitting there shouting to say, do not give me a timeline that you can't keep. Do not say that you're going to publish something in January. I'm booking time from my managers and my organizations to do what you asked me, HR. And if you're then saying in January, you're late with that, I'm already planning in that. I can't plan in that for Feb or March. There's what we talk about, this is release planning. So to understand what is a high probability that we are ready and can be releasing things. And that's when we go out with the communication and preparation for the releasing, for the change management, for with the comms, with the services, so that the organization can absorb what we are doing.
Yeah, adoption is the ultimate measure, is that people actually use and appreciate and get value from the service we put out there. I think that's number one. We should always keep that in mind. If it's not adopted, then we failed. Somewhere it didn't work.
Absolutely.
And keep learning. Keep, you know, and failure is a tough word, but it's really about keep learning and can iterate on that. But I love that idea, that portfolio view. I think there's something there that some progressive HR, they're doing that and having a portfolio view and thinking about where they're putting their best talent and they're on the focus on the right biggest priorities. But in general, I haven't seen that very often, that we have that 30,000 foot view and understand what are the major priorities and who's working on what and what's the backlog. Someone that is doing this, I'd love for you to reach out to me and tell me you are doing this. I'd love to have you on the podcast and talk more about it, because I think it's really important to think that way. And Rena, the next question I wanted to ask you around this is really connected. There's obviously a learning curve for this. Just can you talk us through what's a realistic timeline for an HR team that wants to adapt and go on this agile learning capability, build that capability internally? What are some key milestones? How long should they expect this take? Is this something that takes 2 years, 3 years?
Yeah, good question. Depends very much on the ongoing mentality and mindset in the organization. So we worked with, I may not mention your names, but a very, very well-known American entertainment company where their talent team went into an agile model. And we brought in the structure, the discipline, the way of working, and they were changing it in half a year. So they just were waiting to get a structure so that they already had the mindset. They were already there kind of with the mindset. So they just needed to set up that discipline of how to get this done. Half a year, they were there. They have that now in the core of their people strategy. Everybody needs to go and be upskilled in how to work this way. They've got internal coaches. They've got scrum masters. They've got coaches there that help with the how of working, if that makes sense. Then we have teams that start from scratch. We need to start with the mindset to start establishing that, to bring them together to learn in a safe environment how to work with these things, with simulations, with something that isn't real. Then we need to set up maybe a few projects where they start trying this out and coach them and hold their hands, because they very easily slip back to thinking like they did before. What does it look like? We usually set up a few projects. We show people and we help them show to the stakeholders and the rest of the HR people that we can work this way as well. It's not pushed on anybody, but it's making sense. And then they start learning and expanding. So that's one way. That organic path usually takes 2 years, where they are expanding this from product to product, maybe team to team, and starting onboarding more people into an agile mindset, the way of working. Then we've got these changes where we're going to go into a new operating model in HR. These are the principles. This is a mindset. We're going to give you training, but we need to be ready to kind of rip the Band-Aid off and start working in a new way. These are tricky because even if we have a deadline there, people's minds are not going to change without that experience in working this way. So I tend to say that takes a year, year and a half as well, anyway, even if you're not doing it in an organic way. So there are very many different ways of starting to establish this in HR team. But if you want to go properly, it takes you 1 to 2 years. But if you just want to bring in the mindset, some tools, bringing in design thinking and experimentation and co-creation, you can do that in a few weeks. Agility is everything from sitting down with your clients and really listening to them, which you can implement in a week, to building an operating model where you have tribes and cross-functional teams and building products every quarter out to the organization. And it's everything in between. So it's very contextual according to your maturity, your ambition, and your budget and investment possibilities to actually go here, right?
Yeah, and probably capabilities as well and priorities, right? All those things come into play. That's super helpful to understand that journey. And it sounds like really start with the mindset and just start to experiment if this is something you want to do, and then get a plan together. Maybe call
you. Can I say a warning though?
Yeah.
I need to say a warning, because this is what I warn people very often. There are outside consultants that come in and train your HR with the practices to say, you all have to be doing Scrum to be agile, or you have to take this tool and this blah, blah, blah to be agile. And that is far from agility. Agility means that you're understanding the mindset, understanding the toolkit and the methods, and picking and choosing whatever works for you to deliver value in an incremental, fast way with a customer-centric mindset. It doesn't mean there's a recipe or a blueprint. It doesn't mean there's a 200-page handbook to say, read this and become agile. That is nonsense. And I just want to make sure that I mention it here, because I've been cleaning up after a few agile transformations where this has happened and they haven't even gotten close to true agility with that.
I appreciate you saying that. I think it's a great definition there. Very clarifying. Last question for you, Rena. Ask all my guests this. What is one word or phrase you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Change and adaptability. We are seeing I've said it is the best work to be working in for the next 10 years. It's so exciting because of the AI as well. So we're seeing disruption in the workplace. We're seeing disruption in the talent space. We're seeing AI disrupt our own work and the people, the employees' work. We're seeing geopolitical and financial kind of Bitcoin coming in. We're seeing so many massive changes that change and adaptability is going to be in the core of our future HR skills, if that makes sense. That's why I also believe agile as a way of working is so important. So that's my take on, I think it's very exciting to work in HR. Very exciting.
I agree. It's a great time to be in HR, but you need to be agile. So Rita, thank you for being on the Future of HR podcast. It's an incredible conversation.
Thank you, JP. It has been my pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Rena for sharing her years of experience and wisdom on how Agile HR can help HR teams deliver true value. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with the co-authors of Leaders Make the Future, 10 New Skills to Humanize Leadership with Generative AI. This is actually the third edition of Leaders Make the Future, but this time the authors, Bob Johansson, who's a noted futurist, and his co-authors, Jeremy Kirschbaum and Gabe Cervantes, have really outdone themselves. Using a future-back approach, which is looking 10 years into the future and working backwards, the co-authors have created what I think is one of the best books on the future of leadership that I have read in a long time. There's a lot of talk about how AI will impact work and leadership, but most of what's out there misses the mark. Leaders Make the Future feels fresh, forward-looking, but also realistic and delivers a roadmap for what leadership will look like over the next 10 years. This is a great conversation and one you will not want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.